Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Welcome back to another episode of the Next Brave Thing podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Amy Lee Wicks. Thank you for joining me again. You were in season three, and you shared some of your story, and it was really powerful. So thanks for coming on again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah,
I'm really excited to be here with you.
I know. We've been talking about this for a while. So Amy Lee and I work together at Bethel Conservatory of the Arts, and you are our head of drama. And you're also an author of two books, and one of them I have right here with me, and it's called The Dangerous Country of Love and Marriage. I love it. So this is an assortment of poems, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Did I say it right? Assortment?
Okay. Assortment, collection.
Collection.
Chocolate box of poems, whatever you want.
Yes, it's very beautiful.
It's beautiful, but it is dangerous.
Dangerous. I love it. And I have done quite a number of writing sessions with you because I'm personally wanting to write a book, and I've been talking about it forever. And I was like, I'm just going to get Amy Lee on the podcast and ask you a million questions about writing a book. And really, it's for my own benefit, but I'm sure there is many of you out there who want to write a book. So we are going to pick your brain today, and I'm really excited about that. So you're actually an author of two books. You've got this book. This one was your second book.
That's great.
And then your first book. Well, tell us about that.
Oh, do I have to?
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Is that how I'm going to feel about my first book?
No, there is a poem by Anne Bradstreet where she says, thou ill-formed offspring, untimely, come from my womb, talking about her book. It's called The Author to Her Book.
Yeah.
But that will not be your experience. My first book I wrote when I was 20, got a publishing contract when I was on my 21st birthday, and had a few people really well-intentioned who actually really cared for me say, you may want to reconsider whether you put this out into the world. This is fairly vulnerable and raw.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was going through a lot of things, and I had lots of thoughts and feelings that I spilled onto the page. And that book was published, and I was so proud. And I went around the country and went on a tour with it.
Wow.
That sounds a lot more glamorous than it was, but it was a blast. And then a few years later, as I matured and seasoned and developed, I thought, oh, that book still finds me out, or people would Google my name and they would find it. And I would go, oh, there are some things in that I feel differently about now.
Yeah.
Very differently about. And yet I don't regret it. It's just part of my journey.
Evolution.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that even just with this podcast, and I think that's what probably holds me back from writing is the fear of like, oh, I'm going to change my mind about how I feel about this. Or yeah, even putting out podcasts, I'm like, oh, I've evolved from season one. It's quite vulnerable putting stuff out there.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, were you in New York City when you were writing that?
I was in Manhattan, and I will say something that I've worked very hard since writing that book to cultivate is the freedom and drive that I had then. I didn't actually set out to write a book. I had this overflowing urge to write. I had recently broken off an engagement. I was uncertain about what my future was going to look like, but I just had this overflowing, it wasn't even a desire. It was stronger than a desire where I had to write every day. And I was writing in the margins of my books while I was taking notes at school. And when the book got published, it wasn't until after it was published and I thought about writing a second book that a lot of things like writer's block and concerns about how I would be perceived or whether I was representing myself well came up. And so I actually really look back to little Amy Lee, and I think, how were you so brave? Why were you so willing to just go for it then? And I've actually kind of put in rhythms and rituals and certain I found certain authors that I've kind of devoured their work to help me cultivate a writing life and give myself the permission that I sometimes struggle with after that book.
Yeah. I think that like that's something like you talk about a younger Amy. Is that how you would encourage writers to write? Like, because I know for me, I'm sitting down thinking about if I'm telling a story about other people, I'm thinking about filtering through or editing already, like what they're going to think or how it's going to be perceived. And I often get stuck that way. And I actually, even coaching creatives, like I know someone that isn't, you know, wanting to share this story, but involves their parents and the delicacy of that. And so it almost freezes them. So what would you say to someone like that? And even myself, you know?
So I'll give you what I have, which is kind of only what we can do, right? I can only give you what I've experienced. If I try to give you something else, you're like, this is a shadow of the thing.
Yeah.
The thing.
Mm-hmm.
So something that has worked for me, and it's going to sound weird, and I've never articulated this out loud before, so forgive me for...
We'll work it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's what we do on this podcast.
I think of myself sort of as a small business.
Yeah.
And a business with different employees. And each of those employees is me. But I have a writer. And I do think of my writer as a small child, full of wonder. I have an editor who is a little bit older, pretty cranky, very wise. But people might get the wrong impression. You can picture these as like different actual people. Mm. I have my content editor and my copy editor. I have my marketing manager. I have my salesperson and my social media marketer, which has been kind of in a tomb for over a decade now. But
in a tomb.
Yeah. But I do have a team.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I have found works well for me if I have a project that I'm working on is to delegate very clearly who is doing what and how they can each stay in their lane.
Mm-hmm.
So the advice that I would give you if you're starting to write a book is I would identify like which part of me is trying to come to the table right now. Is my editor attempting to come to the table and I have a blank page still? That's not going to work because all the editor is going to say is, this is a bad idea, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The editor is very cautious and should be fairly ruthless as well. This will come in very handy later. But at the early stages, this does nothing but stop the writing process. Your writer, your flaming spirit, the part of you that knows you are connected to the divine and has capacity to transmit knowledge, wisdom, playfulness, whatever it is that you carry, that you want to give to the world in your book, you create a play space for that part of you, that writer. And you create boundaries and structures for your writer. So you say, hey, every day we're going to come to the table, or this is our rhythm. You kind of look at, there's a larger process to this. I get a calendar out. I start to think about how big is my project? When do I want it done by? When do I want my first draft done by? Let's say if I have 6 months and I want a draft, and I don't care if the draft is super messy, but I know that the editor is not touching it until I get that first draft done.
The whole first draft.
Yep. Let's say first draft in 6 months, if I'm giving myself this as a job.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to say I can commit a few hours a day
mm-hmm.
to this project, my first draft doesn't have to be everything. It doesn't even have to be what it looks like. It's just, you aim for the moon so that you can at least hit the stars, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shoot for the moon, even. Yes, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. And so let's say, okay, I have a 6-month deadline for my first draft, which means I need to create space for my writer. Amy Lee, I'm going to go and find my tools. I'm very analog.
Yes. I
love my Moleskine. It's
I
blank.
I love my
no
Moleskine.
Lines.
Oh, that's
it's
a good
bendy.
Idea. Yeah.
And sometimes I'll scribble on the first page because I know anything that I write after that will be better than my scribble. And so then I've, you know, entered in that way. And then my best friend Laura got me a pen case. I never had a pen case and now I don't know what I'd do without it. And you get a pen that you like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you You want your pen, your paper. You have a calendar with a due date. And then you're going to have these little timed writing prompts that you'll build in for yourself. And you're just going to keep showing up.
Mm.
You're building trust with your writer. Mm. You're building trust. I show up. I set things down. I don't judge them. I often don't read them back. But I know for, let's make it really bite-sized. For half an hour a day, I will be in my writing space. Mm. No one else is allowed except for me as a writer and my page.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, if I want to be working on my computer, I still actually want a journal and pen because I'm still going to check in with myself at the start of any time that I sit down to write. And that's something personal, but it's been, I've used it almost, oh gosh, at least 15 years. I've used it consistently. And I've found that in order for me to get the ideas that I need for my book or my thesis or my project out, I first need to give myself at least 7 minutes of a warm up. And that's where I can just, anything can come out on the page.
Yeah. And you have our students do that at the top of classes. And then do you do a checkout at the end of class? Is that usually what you do?
I do. The checkout at the end is not often written. It can be as simple as thumbs up, thumbs down, sideways.
Yeah.
It can be what vegetable temperature do you feel like?
Yeah.
Not what temperature vegetable, but like,
yeah,
I feel like a chili pepper and I'm 104 degrees or any variation of that. But it's just this idea that I'm acknowledging that along with the work I'm doing, I'm also a person that has emotions and a life outside of this. And so while I can set those things outside and enter in and then fully give myself to this project, I'm also recognizing I'm going to return to life after this.
Yeah, I love that because I find every time I write, like I'm trying to just write 5 minutes a day, and which I don't always do, but I always find that unless I like do a stream of consciousness before I do that, I'm like coming to the page feeling jumbled or like feeling the resistance. So a lot of us have like writers, they call it writer's block, or like resistance against writing. Can you speak to the resistance and have you experienced resistance and maybe how have you overcome it?
Great. Yes. Yes. Because I'm human, I have experienced the resistance. And because I'm an artist, I have extra experienced the resistance. And because I am a writer, I pour over the resistance. But there's a book that's really helpful. It's a very short book. It's called The War of Art.
Oh, yes.
By Stephen Pressfield.
So good. Yeah.
And he describes any creative act kind of like doing sit-ups, if I remember right, where it's like ab exercises. It's like the thing you avoid, but it's the thing you want the most. And so the way that I encounter, that I respond to resistance or writer's block is not necessarily like a bulldozer that's trying to go through a mountain, because I don't always have the energy and the oof to just smash the thing in the face. Sometimes I do. I think of it more as like, maybe I'm a mountain goat and I'm going to find a way up this. Oh, more rocks have fallen. Okay, how can I carefully step around and still find a way to get nourished, still find a way to ascend the hill? And practically what that looks like when I encounter resistance is I make my creative act and I make that a space of nourishment and pleasure so that even if the actual writing is still not painful in the way that running is painful, right? It's because it's using muscles, but it's not painful like something's broken. It's just, oh, this is the resistance of building muscle. And the way that I make my creative act nourishing is I set the stage. So if I'm going to be writing in the same place, then I'm going to have a hot drink that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a pen that I love holding. When I hold my pen, I'm like, I love you, pen.
Yeah, I have got some pens like that for sure.
Yes, I'm going to have paper that I also like approaching. And I'm going to be really conscious and gentle but firm with the other parts of me that try to enter the room. So when my editor comes in, which is often where resistance comes from.
Like the more judgy kind of voice?
Yeah, it's that.
Or like critiquing?
It's that person that leans over your shoulder and is like, what are you working on? Ooh, doesn't look like you got very far.
Yeah.
Or, ooh, are you sure that's a good idea? Didn't you want to do this other thing? And I'm just like, maybe my writer also has a mama bear in the room, and the mama bear talks to the, I don't even let my writer talk mm-hmm. to the editor, because the writer's just like, what? I just play sandbox, please.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that will respond. Part of it comes to, you have to recognize what form is the resistance coming from? Is it, oh, I'm just tired, couldn't be bothered. Oh, I have chores to do. The house is a mess. If the house is a mess and you cannot write unless your dishes are clean, take your journal and your pen, walk out of the house, sit on your stoop, go to a cafe, go somewhere very beautiful and
yeah.
do your messy or what feels ugly creative act there. Let yourself be held in a space that you feel drawn to, because you'll come back. And because afterwards, similar to a run, you'll have the endorphins, you'll have that feeling of like, I did the thing. Okay, I did the thing. And also recognizing doing the thing, showing up, is actually something really valiant and admirable. It's having repeated rhythms, building them in until they become routines, is caring for yourself well, whether it's writing or making breakfast at the same time or washing dishes a certain way. These are all these tiny acts and ways that you can love yourself. And with writing a book, particularly, you also are wanting to really mark what you've done and celebrate your milestones along the way. Because otherwise you just feel like you're lost in this world of this big project. And is it ever going to get done? And am I making any progress?
I think, well, I did a like webinar on how to write a book, and they basically were like, what do you, because I kind of get overwhelmed on like, what am I writing a book about? And because I teach Wholehearted Artists emotional health class. So the fear is that I'll go into self-helpy preachy land, but I don't know what kind of stories to share or have a theme. And it gets a little overwhelming. And I kind of had like 10 chapters outlined, but then I felt like it was getting clinical and impersonal. But so how do you know, like for instance, with this book, how did you know it was going to be a book? And yeah, like how do we know like what we're supposed to write about? Because I kind of feel a little overwhelmed on like, I could talk about relationships. I could talk about creativity. I could talk about wholehearted living. Like I feel a little bit like, where am I going? What's the through line? Like, you know what I mean? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to set parameters. You want to know where your playground is located, your playground being your book. You want to know what the boundary lines are and what the scope of your book is and a general idea of who your audience is. But a lot of times you'll get stuck on who my audience is and what I'm writing about, and then you're fixated on that. So I would say your check-in or your writing thing is a space for you to say, I don't know what I'm going to write about. It could be this or this or this. 7 minutes, great. Set that aside. And then you come back once you have your scope. So let's say Wholehearted Artist is your starting point. You don't actually know what the book is going to be about fully until you write it. And it's really important that you remember that. So when I was doing my PhD, I was at Victoria University in Wellington, and I took this orientation. I took all of the orientations. There was an international student orientation. I was like, yes, sign me up, full week, I'm in. The PhD orientation, it was mostly scientists, and I was like, does this apply to creative writers? And they're like, not really. I was like, I'll stay anyway. I just wanted...
You're such a learner.
Yeah.
Like you love to learn. Yeah.
Well, and I felt like I really was like, I've never done this before. Somebody tell me how to do this. I'm going to be here for 3 years. How do I even know what I'm writing about? And then, and so I'll give you the layout, the lay of the land for that, because it might be helpful in thinking about your book. So the first third was spent actually coming up with a proposal. This is what I'm going to write about. And it's pretty extensive. The proposal can take up to a year to write.
Really?
Yes. Hey. And this is for a research project, but what am I going to write? What are the main sources I'm going to be using if I'm doing research, qualitative or quantitative? And where do I think this is going to go? The helpful thing for me in the orientation was someone got up and they had a marker and they said, when people come in to do their PhD, and I'll change this, when you come in to write a book, you think it's going to have a story arc. Like, mm-hmm. This is where I came in to write my book. This is where I was alone in the room writing furiously and it reached this crescendo, climax here, and this is the unraveling, the denouement, and I walked away with my book, right? That's what we think.
Yes.
When we approach a project.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is very different. It's more like there's this thing that I want to write about and learn about. There are these questions that I have. And so I go upward and I start to look and I end up making these like curly cues and swirls and I end up in this cloud of ideas. And then I realize a lot of time has gone by and my energy is really heightened and I've learned a lot of things, but now I need to choose a direction, but it's only this one strand from this big thick tangle of information and ideas. And I need to pull that out. That becomes the book, and then I tie it off. But your book is less like the overarching story of your life and all that encompasses all that you know. And it's more like one strand of that.
Mm.
And the more particular you can get with that, the more kind and direct and focused you can give. And I'll talk about how to stay focused, how to stay in that lane. The more likely you are to actually succeed in finishing your project.
Mm.
It's also maybe helpful to think of writing a book like traveling to another country. Like there are lots of places you could go. When you get in a plane, you could go anywhere really. But if you land in one place and you're going to see one city for 3 days, there's no use really trying to compare it to these other cities or trying to be like, well, maybe we should take a 1.5 day trip over here. It's like, well, this is what you've got. You've got 3 days and this is where you've landed. So I would say for you, like, is your goal to write your first draft in a year, in 6 months? And is your general drive wholehearted artist? If that's the case, that's the strand, that's the country. What do you know about it? Give your writer permission to just write yourself through a course. You've taught this course, right? You've taught semesters of this.
Yeah.
Go ahead and say, I'm going to spend 10 minutes of my writing time just remembering, what did I teach in the first class? Mm-hmm. What did I teach in the second class? What did I teach in the third class? What did I teach in the fourth class? How does this all tie together? And now I can go back and I can fill in the gaps. And I'm getting to where I have an accordion, right? Mm. Because you already know the beginning and the end.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're going to find which parts need to be unfolded and how can I expand it? You've already got an outline for 10 chapters. Mm-hmm. You've done more work than you realize.
That's
another part of it. So now with those 10 chapters, how are you feeling about them? Do they feel like, this feels like the bones of a book? Or does it feel like, I hate chapter 4.
And I hate all of them, really.
Oh, no. No, it just is feeling self-helpy. Okay. Like, let me tell you about, I don't hate all of them, say that.
No,
being dramatic. Yes. But I think it's more just the it's feeling self-helpy, if that, yeah.
Okay.
Because it's like I've taken my curriculum and it's lacking like a human behind it, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be the fun part then.
Okay.
So the self-help part means what I hear you saying is you have the instructions, you have the user manual, and now you need the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can we talk about story?
Yeah. Let's go there.
Okay. Okay. This is, oh, great. Okay. Robert McKee, who wrote the book Story.
Yes.
Which is like,
I saw it on David's desk, yesterday. Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
He says every story has one controlling idea wrapped in an emotional spell.
Mm.
So I would venture to say you have your controlling idea. Your controlling idea of the wholehearted artist. The controlling idea, basically, if you look at a story arc and you come to the highest dramatic conflict in it, and you put an X there and then you circle that, the controlling idea is what happens when you get to that point. An example would be, in a story, two people fall in love and there are all of these obstacles to their love because she's a doctor from Spain and he is a ship captain from Norway. And
great. I love it. Yeah, I'm good. Tracking.
And so how is it going to work? And then there's a big storm while he's away at sea and she has a medical crisis that she's attending to. And anyway, finally, they end up somehow in the middle of this storm together on the ship deck, and they're holding each other, and they either decide at this highest point of dramatic conflict when they're about to die in the storm that the truth is love is not worth it, and she needs to go back to Spain because she needs to care for the children she was caring for in this children's hospital where she worked. And he's like, I agree. I actually need to see the seas. That's where my heart is.
Right.
You're doing so good making this up on the spot. It's great.
Okay. So that mm-hmm. will tell you love is not all.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, your destiny is all. And so you must pursue your destiny. That's a controlling idea. Alternatively, gotcha. They're in the storm.
Yeah.
And he says, there is nothing else but you.
Yeah.
And she says, I have these dreams, but you.
It's right. Really good.
Okay. I feel like I would watch it.
Yeah, I'd watch it. I'm there.
Okay, great. And so then that controlling idea becomes love is all.
Yeah.
And everything else will fall into place if you choose to follow.
Yeah. Okay.
So for your book, even if it is more clinical or more right directional, what are you telling people about being a wholehearted artist? And whatever it is at this height of your kind of two-thirds or further through that is resolving in your book, that becomes your controlling idea. Now we can talk about the emotional spell.
Yeah.
And the emotional spell is Joseph Campbell, who wrote A Hero with a Thousand Faces, talks about the hero's journey and how you write a story, how you craft a story by the first third becomes the departure and then the initiation and then the return.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Vogler, in his book, The Writer's Journey, which mm-hmm. I would strongly recommend checking out, even if it's just to get the picture of a little ship on top of a circle and it maps you out this writer's journey of what is your ordinary world, the call to adventure, the refusal of the call. Then there's, you come across a threshold, you have tests, allies, and enemies. There's a great ordeal, you enter a cave. And then there's this change that happens, which arguably this change would happen at the highest point of dramatic conflict. And then you have your journey back. And you're going to go back never the same once you've crossed this threshold, mm-hmm. Which you're doing for your artists, right? You're yeah. writing this book because you want to change people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you're getting there is not just going to be through your user manual. It's actually going to be through your story.
Yeah.
And so the fun part of your writing, now that you've got the bones, I would say go and start placing yourself in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or give yourself permission and distance to let yourself become other people and start writing little stories for each chapter.
Yeah.
This isn't the only way you can do it, Ella, but I'm just, if you're concerned that you're talking at your audience too much, then probably what's missing is you.
Yeah.
Where your vulnerability mm-hmm. and stories might feel like, oh, I don't want to be self-indulgent. I don't want to, mm-hmm. this isn't about, but the truth is you are the emotional spell that people will be choosing into. They will be drawn to the journey that you're going to share. It mm-hmm. doesn't always have to be autobiographical. It can be, it could be anecdotes and stories from students that have passed through your class and mm-hmm. shared stories with them. It can be, if you were a psychologist, it can be anonymous or names changed mm-hmm. stories of patients. But I remember specifically in The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, it was these stories at the start of each chapter that like blew my mind. And I was like, well, what's going to happen? How is this going to unfold? And then the psychological impact and studies and research were used to really bolster back up the story. But that story is what drew mm-hmm. what drew me in and kept my attention. And walking away, the reason that I remember the points, the key messaging throughout the book was really because of these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Even as you're sharing, I'm thinking of a Pinterest quote called that thing you're afraid to write that. And I can feel this like invitation as you're speaking to really get honest on the page. And it's something I think, and that's something that I do as a coach, is sometimes I notice like if I'm helping, whether it's a student or a client, to break through, it's usually they have to start with getting very honest with themselves, and then usually enlightenment happens. Because I think that I know in myself, like control wants to come in and manage it, or manage the story, or manage my shame about something, or the discomfort of sharing something. And I think like being wholehearted is really about fully owning who you are and your story. And so part of the reason why I'm writing this book is to fully become more unapologetically Ella. And so I think about judgment of like, if someone judges something about me, it's usually because I judge that about me. And so part of the writing for me is this more giving myself the biggest hug of like, I don't judge you. And I'm going to even show you how much I don't judge you by putting a book out in the world, which is so vulnerable. But I also am like, it is that piece of like, I remember reading this book called Love Warrior, and the honesty on the page invited me into a greater place of love. And so anyway, I know that's kind of a tangent, but as you're sharing this,
this is what you're sharing. I can feel it on my inside, and I'm like, this is actually why you need to write a book, Ella. Like, you carry such a beautiful heart for authenticity and vulnerability and groundedness. Mm. The questions you're asking me, I'm like, wow, I can feel them even pinging my own self, like, this is real. And there are, it's you, it's me, and it's other people that are like, why am I not writing the book? Or when I am writing the book, where is all of this resistance coming from?
And
I think maybe part of starting the writing journey is important to recognize, which I don't think a lot of people do. People say, oh, I'm writing a book, or I'm working on a book. And that seems like this great endeavor, this noble cause. But the reality is, sitting and writing it is infuriating. It can be, and it's very vulnerable, even if you're not writing something personal.
Yeah.
Because once you set it down, once it's printed, it feels like, well, but maybe I would change it. But it's like, mm-hmm. no, you're giving the gift of transmitting whatever knowledge mm-hmm. and wisdom you have at that time, with your life worth of experience so far. Mm. And it's going to be, it's human. It's beautiful. What you're sharing doesn't feel tangential at all. It feels it feels really actually at the like core, at the heart of of this thing.
Yeah. Jeremy Riddle says this great quote. He says, there's parts of us that aren't awakened until we create. Jeremy, just like there is a part of me that is not awakened. And I love that about how infinite we are as humans. There's so much inside us. And what it,
to that point, what have you discovered about yourself in completing a book, or what have you learned about yourself as an artist? Because I know that for me, even like I went to drama school, but then went into business world. So actually seeing myself as a wholehearted artist is like a thing that I'm still like, I want to feel convicted about that, even though I teach about it, but I'm still rumbling with that. But I can imagine when you complete projects, there's this confidence that comes. But yeah, I'd love you to speak to what you've discovered about yourself in writing.
Oh, I remember in my undergrad, I pitched that I wanted to write a creative thesis, which was not very usual in the school I went to. And I wrote about how I wanted to move from dating writing to getting married. I wanted to move
from doing it
when it was fun and having this on again, off again, like, I hate you, I love you, come here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing to like, we're gonna commit to each other. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna show up when I'm upset. I'm gonna show up when I'm happy. I'm just gonna show up and we're gonna build things and we're gonna make a life out of this writing thing. And fast forward to working on my dissertation. I wrote in a confessional transcendent mode. So
yeah.
I actually had part of my thesis written as a memoir and the information that I was finding. And I was researching this New Zealand poet, James K. Baxter. I started looking into him. My parents got divorced 35 years after being married, and I was shocked and flabbergasted. And I came across James Keir Baxter, who was married to Jacqueline Sturm, and they separated. And he wrote this poem called He Waiata Motekare. And it was, He Waiata Motekare is like a love song to my beloved. And he wrote it while they were separated. And he said, my love, if one day you could find a branch to rest on beside me, I think we could both be happy. And I thought this man who had passed away in 1972 carried the answer for like how to make marriage work or how to bring people back together. Any Kiwis listening are laughing at this point if they know James Baxter, because he was a mess and they didn't end up back together. And he was a very interesting, complicated human. But I'm writing this thesis that I think is about confessionally transcendent poetry and what it means to be present while we create our art and things that sound important. And really, as I'm writing, I'm getting to this part of me that realizes like, I'm a grown up and I'm mad at my mom and dad. And I want them to have figured it out because I'm newly married and I want to figure it out.
Yeah.
But how can I figure it out if they didn't?
Yeah.
It's okay if none of this is logical because my child self doesn't have to be logical.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting, gosh, I didn't think I'd be crying talking about writing a book. I remember sitting working on my thesis and I was like, how am I going to wrap this whole thing up? And I had just come to a part where I realized what was needed wasn't for that guy to have figured something out or for my parents to have figured something out. What I needed was grace and the ability to forgive myself and others and to not hold people to standards and not hold myself to this kind of rule-like standard, even in writing, where I was going to figure it all out. And so,
yeah,
I was sort of getting wrecked by that, like,
yeah,
oh, I didn't expect to be finding out that I'm human in the process of writing this. I thought I was expecting to find out that I was superhuman and like could write at these.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading about the end of James Baxter's life. He had started a commune in a little town called Hiruharama in Whanganui, Jerusalem, in New Zealand. And he left that and he's wandering barefoot in Auckland. And he has a heart attack on a street corner and he died in a stranger's home. And then I read how Jackie, his wife, who he was estranged from, how she traveled up to Auckland where he was.
And she drove with him, with his body back to Jerusalem, because she knew he would want to be buried there where he had left his family to start this commune.
Wow.
And I thought she did find a way back to him.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I don't know, there was this grace and this beauty. And for me, I just remember weeping and thinking, it doesn't end how I thought it was going to end.
Yeah.
But it's even more beautiful and alive.
Yeah.
And my process doesn't look so wrapped up and perfect like how I think it should.
Mm.
How to write a book isn't like, these are your steps and then you have a book. You can do that. I mean,
yeah,
you can totally do it. I could tell you in a very straightforward way, sit down and write this many minutes a day. Let your editor come in at this stage. Bring in your marketing team here, all of these you. And you will have a book.
Mm.
But the purpose of a book is to share knowledge or information. And I just feel like if you can get to a place where you believe what you carry and who you are is enough mm-hmm. to set down, then the book, that the user manual mm. will be alive and it will be human and it will,
yeah,
it will have the emotional spell of your touch on it. And mm. that will actually be the thing that will be memorable. So it mm. won't just be like a tick for you. Like, I've written the book, I've gotten it published. It will be a gift to the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
That went in a different direction than I thought it was going
to
go.
Yeah. But I love this. I think that you're hitting on what it means to be wholehearted, which is like out of the, well, I think because you're hitting, and Kelsey, one of our BCA alumni, says it well. She's like, I knew what it was to be the artist part, like how to create or sing at the right key and to learn the script or whatever. But then there's the wholehearted part. And I think there's the story while writing the story. It's the behind the scenes. And often we're most intrigued by the behind the scenes. And even I think I love the story that you share, because it's not so much the shiny redemption Hallmark movie outcome. It's the, oh, how do I reframe this? And it also is redemptive, but it's not this clunky, perfect Hallmark fantasy ending as well, you know? So I just love this. And I think that guys, if you have questions, maybe we'll have to have Amy Lee back on to do a part two on how to get your book published and yes. all of that.
Yes.
But sort of in wrapping up, I guess, practically, this is so beautiful. I love this. So practically, I've written my first draft, let's say in 6 months. I'm putting it out there on a podcast. 6 months, get a first draft out there. Then what?
Great.
So what do you do next?
Once you've written your first draft, take a moment to celebrate, first of all, because mm-hmm. you've showed up for yourself. You've done it. And now comes the introduction of your team. So you're going to want to have a structure that you're going back to. So something like, what was the goal of this book? What was my controlling yeah. idea?
Mm-hmm.
And who did I think this was generally going to be for?
Mm.
Those are a couple of questions that you want to have kind of on hand that you can look back at.
Yeah.
Where was I starting and where was I meant to end? And now I'm going to let my editor in. And first, I'm going to read over that draft a few times. At this stage, for me, I would not let other people into my
journey. Okay. Yeah.
Here's why. There will be a real draw to share your first draft and be like, tell me what you think. The danger with that, there are a few dangers. The danger with that is that either someone will come in and praise it so much that it's very easy to become blind
yeah.
to things that might need correction. Alternatively, you will crave really brutal feedback. Someone will come in, chop it down, and be like, it doesn't make sense, I don't get it. And you will walk away being like, oh my gosh, why did I just waste my time on that?
Yeah.
Or you'll be confused. So I would say with your very first draft, you're going to want to edit a few times yourself. Let your own editor self come to the table and work through this and get it to a place where you feel less romantic about it and more practical. Like this looks like a book. This feels like a book. I'm removed enough now. I've let my editor have a go and slash some things out or say, what does this have to do with anything there? And then I'll go back and I'll say, you're right, let's cull that part. Or I'll go back and in revision, you have a couple of options when you get feedback, even from yourself.
Mm.
If I say, oh, your tone is off, you're too verbose, you've got too many words in there. It's just, can you shorten it and make it simpler? Your response can either be like, absolutely, we're going to go in and we're going to revise by eliminating. We're going to mm-hmm. just compress this down. Or you can say, not verbose enough. And you can expound and mm-hmm. kind of double down. Both mm-hmm. can be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And you will learn by revising. The revision process should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's
good to know.
Yeah. It shouldn't be like, oh, I've done the hard work. Now I don't want to have to go back. And it's not that at all. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to take my manuscript and I'm going to maybe go to a cafe. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy bringing cafe to the.
I'm going back to Melbourne. So I'm like cafe galore.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Don't try to do this at the beach. You can get nothing done at the beach.
Yeah, it's true.
Be at the beach. Just be at the beach. Just
great advice.
If you go to the beach, just be at the beach. And again, have a pen, have some highlighters, mm-hmm. and really take time being like a kind but firm teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Great job. Oh, this is beautiful. I love this. I see how this connects to part 10, but I'm going to spread my pages out. I'm going to see if things are in order.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get big picture and say, does this have that arc? Do I hit the controlling idea? Am I wandering around and I'm not really landing? Or is chapter 6 actually chapter 1?
Mm.
And the way that I do that is I like physical copies. You can do this on your computer. The trouble with a computer is, first of all, when you stare at a screen for too long, your brain can turn to mush. And second, it's harder to move things around. But when you have pieces of paper and you can spread them out on the floor, think Joe and Little Women.
Yeah.
You can start to see the body take shape and you can form it. So after you've got your first draft, print it up, get a cute highlighter and some pens, make notes, highlight things, cross things off, make question marks, take that back to your computer, make a copy of your first draft, keep your first draft. That's an artifact you want to hang on to. Untouched, unedited. It also tells you I have permission to write without my stuff getting chopped up mm-hmm. the first go. I'm just allowed to have a first. Now you make a copy and now you track your changes and you start chopping and changing, follow what you've got in your notes, add to it, and go through and give yourself a time frame for that. How long do you want to take to come to your second draft? Do you want to take a month?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a week? Do you want to, you know?
Yeah.
And how long do you want to spend? Does it do your head in if you spend more than an hour editing? Or do you actually need a 4-hour chunk because you're like, once I'm in the zone, I'm like, you know, figure out what really works for your editor.
Yeah.
And then let them at it.
Yeah.
And then when you have a second draft, take your time and celebrate. And your second draft, when you've really worked through it and you feel like pretty confident about it, now it might be time to invite 2 to 3 people maximum into your writing journey for the purpose of reviewing and editing.
Yeah.
You want at least 2 and you're hoping that they'll have contrasting feedback because that's helpful.
That's good.
It's not bad if they're like, this is great. And the other person's like, this is awful. You're like, wonderful. These are human beings with feelings.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
You'll take their feedback and you'll turn it into a third draft. And at this point, you're going to look at it and you're going to think, I've really got something here. My book is getting ready.
Mm.
Also, in the process of your first draft, it can be helpful if you've got a chapter that you feel like is really good to have a separate session. This cannot interfere with your writing time. It should not, right? You really have to schedule out. You don't have to.
Mm.
People write books all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
But for me, I like to really schedule it out. So if I'm going to let my my promoter in, my person that's going to go to the publisher, I'm going to do it not during my writing time, but I'm going to say, great, I'm going to snag a chapter of this and I'm going to send it out to a few publishers, even though it's scary and I'm like, I don't even know if I could write a book.
Yeah.
But I have a chapter that feels really good.
Yeah.
And I have a pitch that feels good. And,
yeah.
And that's going to be a separate chunk of time.
Because
what I don't want to do is anything but writing.
Yeah.
My writing has to be consistent.
Yeah.
And then these other things, if I want to do them, great. I can build in chunks of time for them. But my writing, I want that to be consistent.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Well, in closing, do you have a final charge to the writer? What would you say to people starting out? Why is telling our stories important?
My charge to you as a writer.
Okay, Ella, great.
And to any of you as writers. You are a story. Like, we are all, we're part of the collective story of humankind, but there is no one like you and no one else has your story.
Mm.
When you set it down, this process of healing begins in you, but you don't realize, or maybe you do realize, maybe you've heard in scripture, it says testimonies produce faith.
Mm-hmm.
Stories don't just link us to each other. They give us hope. They give us wonder. They give us permission. They give us curiosity. And so when you do the brave thing of setting down your story, you're going on a journey of discovery, of bravery, of adventure. You're becoming irrevocably changed. And eventually the hope is that you will return to your ordinary world with all of your ordinary people with some elixir of life that they desperately need. And so I encourage you to write. There's not enough good stories. Yours is needed.
Mm.
We need your voice at the table.
Mm.
Please write your book.
Mm. Thank you. That's so beautiful. Well, you heard it here, guys. My next brave thing is to write a book. So Amy Lee, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I feel so inspired and I have so many ideas now. Like, you just having this conversation, I feel unblocked, which is really great. And I'll have to get you back on to like go, okay, I've done the 6 months and now what? And how do you flesh things out? Because this is so helpful. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Lots of love.
Lots of love.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.